Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and we're catching up on some of your messages in response to our episode about Christmas decorations first. Robert, let's see, do you want to read this first one, or should I?
Yeah, sure, I'll do this one. This one comes to us from Lucy. Loved your holiday inventions episode and wanted to write in that my parents still do many of the old and or dangerous traditions. We put bubble lights in the tree every year when I was a kid. They still have some of those strings from the 90s, but they've also gotten replacement bulbs for burnt out ones over the years. These new ones are hopefully less toxic than the originals. The best, though, is live candles on the Christmas tree. My family is originally from Germany, and when my grandparents were first married, they studied in Germany for a year or two on my grandmother's Fulbright scholarship. They picked up their tradition of candles there and kept it up every year until they moved into a retirement home that would not allow it. Since then, my parents have taken over the tradition. The key is to get a fresh tree. Instead of buying it from a Christmas tree lot, we go out to a Christmas tree farm a day or two before Christmas Eve and cut down a fresh one. This means that when you light the candles a few days later, there is still so much moisture in the needles and branches that if a flame touches it, it just fizzles out. We always light the tree from top to bottom, so that as we sit around singing Christmas carols and talking, the top candles burn out first, and we can watch the shadows from the lower candles on the ceiling. Sometimes my dad will even get the ornaments hung so that the rising heat from a candle beneath it will make the ornament spin.
Whoa.
Obviously, we still have a pitcher of water nearby, but we've never had to use it. I've grown up with these traditions, so I sometimes forget that not everyone does them. Great to hear about the history behind them. I always love listening to you guys, Lucy.
Oh, well, that does sound very nice, Lucy, but I don't think I'd risk it.
Yeah, there's a story in my family, and I asked around to see if I could find out who it was. But so this one's going to be one of those kind of like horrible third-hand stories. But there's somebody I was connected to where the wife brought with her German traditions and insisted on doing the candles. But then the husband was very suspicious of actual candles on a Christmas tree and would stand by with a fire extinguisher aimed at the tree the whole time, just ready for it to go up.
I mean, you're going to do candles on the tree. Why not just like hang butane torches from the branches? They make their own ornaments and candles.
All right. Well, it looks like Carney is still in the Christmas spirit and has another one of these listener mails for you, Joe.
Okay. This one comes from Rose. Rose says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. Loved your latest episode on the history of Christmas decorations. The talk about whether gingerbread houses are meant for eating brought back some early childhood memories. When I was a little kid in the 90s, my family decorated gingerbread houses every year, except we didn't use any actual gingerbread. My grandma would construct houses out of cardboard, which we would coat in frosting and decorate with candy and pretzels." I think some might say that gingerbread and cardboard have negligible differences, but that would be a true Grinch of a person who said that.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. I mean, real gingerbread, if you're using real ginger, you get that kind of like, it's almost spicy, so it can really work.
Wait, are you supposed to use fresh ginger in gingerbread? I thought you were supposed to use ginger powder in baking. Maybe I don't know anything about this.
Well, I've never actually made it myself, so I have no idea ultimately. But I know that generally you can taste the difference between real ginger and powdered ginger. And then, of course, I feel like I have had gingerbread. When a gingerbread is good, it tastes a little spicy. Like, mm-hmm. So,
okay.
You know, where it kind of like bites you back a little bit.
Okay, I think that would probably be fresh ginger. Wait, you were saying real ginger, though. Do you mean fresh ginger, or is ginger powder not from real ginger? Surely it is.
When I say real ginger, you know, I'm meaning fresh ginger.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's actual imitation ginger out there.
There's imitation vanilla. There's imitation stuff.
Oh, true.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. To continue with Rose's message. So we got these houses made out of cardboard, decorated with candy and pretzels. Picking up, they definitely weren't meant to be eaten. If I'm remembering right, they would sit out as a decoration for a while. Maybe people would steal a few pieces of candy off, and then we just threw them out after Christmas. Unfortunately, we stopped this tradition while I was still fairly young, but I have fond memories of it, though it was pretty weird in hindsight. Happy holidays, Rose. I don't know if it's that much weirder than anything else, so sounds kind of nice.
Yeah, and then you're not wasting the gingerbread this way, so I say go for it. All right, we have another one here. This one comes to us from Victoria. Victoria writes, "I'm an environmental scientist, and I allow this in my home. Is it dumb? Absolutely. Why do we do it? Tradition. Cue fiddler theme." And, of course, it is a picture of a Christmas tree with live candles, with burning candles on it.
They look pretty cool because the candles are twisty. I've never seen this before. They're like corkscrew-shaped a little bit. I mean, very slightly corkscrew-shaped.
And in the photo, a gentleman that I believe is Victoria's husband is lighting it, because she continues. "My German husband grew up placing real candles on a real conifer, lighting them with real fire and watching them burn to their bases without a trace of anxiety. He clings to this tradition harder than any other, and I don't mind living a little dangerously. We have some firm rules around this practice. Number one, the tree must never go thirsty. I pay more attention to this dead plant's hydration than that of my own body. The conifer will be less of a powder keg if the leaves don't dry out. We fill the tips before every lighting. If they're getting crunchy, the candles are not lit. Number two, everyone knows where the fire extinguisher is and how to use it. I acknowledge that this wouldn't be enough to put out a fully engulfed tree, but it is better than nothing. Number three, when lit, the candles are supervised at all times. This part can get a little boring. However, there's little else to do on Christmas Eve besides sipping scotch and staring at your potential doom. Number four, after the holidays, take the discarded tree to the bonfire beach and burn it. Watching that thing shoot flames high into the air puts whole celebratory practices in perspective. Knowing the risk makes us more vigilant. Thank you both for the stimulating content. May your holidays be far less perilous than mine. Warm regards, Victoria."
The regards sound very warm. Thank you for sharing this, Victoria. This is great, and I love the picture.
Yeah, this was a great bit of listener mail. Really loved this one.
Okay, how about this response going back to our episodes about spinning?
Yeah, let's spin.
Okay, this comes from Joe, a different Joe. Joe says, "Dear Robert and Joe, I've been enjoying your recent episodes in listener mail on the science of spinning as it affects the human body. It's a fascinating topic. It was delightful to hear the perspective of a ballet dancer, ice skater, and pole dancer, but I'm surprised no one mentioned aerialists. I gotta say, that did not even enter my mind. In fact, I don't know if I would have known what that word meant before this mail. So thanks for bringing it up, Joe.
I should have known. I've seen aerialists perform before. I mean, I've certainly been to Cirque du Soleil, so I should have thought about the spinning that takes place there.
The Cirque du Soleil, yeah. Okay, so Joe goes on. Aerialists, as you probably know, as I didn't know, are the section of performance artists of the circus realm that perform aerial stunts on aerial apparati. Many common apparati, such as the hoop, lyra, and aerial straps, also test the brain and body. One extra weird apparatus is the Spanish web. The Spanish web is essentially a human lasso. One performer hangs from a thick rope some distance from the ground, while another performer assists in spinning the dangling performer in a giant circle. The aerialist in the air then performs stunts and tricks and so on. The spinning action is unique because the body isn't just turning on a single axis, but is also often moving in a slight orbit around the center, sometimes at high speed and with changing orientations. The head games are very interesting and take some practice, as you've said. One trick that many spinning aerialists use is to focus on something that isn't spinning in relation to the performer, such as the apparatus itself or their own hands or feet. It's similar in concept to the spotting technique that ballerinas use, but without having to turn the head. Since the apparatus itself keeps the performer from tipping, the aerialist can divert their focus, unlike a ballerina that needs a reference point to stay balanced. Focusing the vision intently on the apparatus as opposed to the spinning world behind it is a massive game changer, and as it slightly tricks the brain from being disoriented with the spinning room. Also, if one can't see their own body or apparatus, such as in many aerial strap spins, the trick is to not focus on anything at all. Don't try to follow the spinning world in front of you, but fall into soft focus. Easier said than done. It takes practice. Other fun tricks to help with dizziness before spinning include eating lots of ginger or drinking ginger tea to prevent nausea. Ginger yet again.
Yeah.
Also, if one does get dizzy and finds themselves with the spins, they can sometimes jump up and down to help with the motion. It won't do much if your spins are bad, but it seems to help some performers who overdo it momentarily for some reason. I just thought your listeners might also find this obscure life knowledge important as they happen to find themselves trapped inside a washer or never-ending tilt-a-whirl. Thanks for all you guys do. Keep up the great work. Joe. And then Joe also sent a follow-up saying it was him again, and he sent some links to videos of artists performing Spanish web and aerial straps, fast spins in regards to human spinning.
Very cool. And yeah, I like the ginger tidbit as well. Yeah, ginger can be very nice for slight feelings of nausea and stomach illness. We keep some ginger candies on hand in the car and in the backpack whenever we're out and about, just in case.
Oh yeah. Oh, it maybe helps with car sickness too.
Yeah. And if nothing else, it tastes sweet and has a little gingery buzz to it. So. All right, we have some additional listener mail here coming to us, and these bits concern Weird House Cinema, our Friday episodes that are sort of a late-night celebration of weird films as opposed to the general science and culture content that we put out. This comes to us from Chris. Hi, Robert and Joe. First off, I love Weird House Cinema. I was a lapsed Stuff to Blow Your Mind fan, too many podcasts to listen to, who checked in for the Halloween episodes this year and was delighted to find Weird House Cinema in the feed. It perfectly scratches this itch for strange and or bad movie discussion with a science and philosophy angle. Please keep doing it. I just finished the Ghost in the Machine episode. I'd forgotten all about this movie until I saw the title in my feed and immediately was reminded of the only scene I ever watched, the microwave scene.
Oof.
I was born in 1991 and was very young when I was flipping through channels and landed on HBO just in time to see a man getting his face cooked by an open microwave. I was sufficiently freaked out and changed the channel immediately. Ever since then, I've always had this tiny fear in the back of my mind when opening a microwave door. What if it didn't shut off? Is it going to cook my face? This even cropped up recently as my fiance has a habit of opening the microwave door to grab something while it's still running, trusting that the auto off will work as intended. Turns out our microwave door latch is a little hinky, and it recently seemed to keep running as she opened it up and reached in to grab whatever she was heating up. I had flashbacks to Ghost in the Machine and was pretty freaked out, even though nothing had happened to her. We looked into it later, and it's most likely that the magnetron had shut off, but the fan and light kept running. Still, I asked that she just hit the off button before opening the door, just in case. Anyway, keep up the great work, and thanks for discussing this movie that gave me a lifelong phobia. I can't wait to tune in again next Friday. Chris.
I've actually seen a malfunctioning microwave that worked exactly like that, except in this case, it was every time you would open the door, the light inside would come on and the rotating plate would start rotating, but I think it wasn't cooking.
Well, I appreciate the kind comments there. I certainly feel you on there being just too many podcasts to listen to at times. So, you know, hopefully we're not loading anybody up with too much. Hopefully with the ideas, we just give you some choices, you know? You know, if you want to just listen to Weird House, just listen to Weird House. You just want to come in and listen to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind episodes, go for it. I mean, I think I'm supposed to advise everyone to subscribe, but I don't know. Maybe subscription doesn't work for everybody. I don't know. Do what you want. Do what feels good for you. As long as you're listening to some of our show, I guess I'm happy. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, I mentioned a few episodes back that I thought we had lost some emails that came in during September and October. I think somehow they just like disappeared from our inbox. And our longtime correspondent, Jim in New Jersey, actually resent several emails from that period. So we wanted to catch up with them now. The first one concerned our episodes on mushroom foraging. And we were talking about how sometimes human foraging techniques are strangely kind of similar to AI, to computer search algorithms. And so Jim often writes in on like computer science related topics, and he's got some comments here. So Jim says, Robert and Joe, you mentioned AI searching algorithms at the end of your mushroom series. I can provide one. It's considered an AI algorithm, but it's really just an algorithm that I think I can describe sufficiently. It's called A star search, and that's spelled like in typography with the letter A and then an asterisk. It's a type of foraging algorithm through a network. Cities and the roadways connecting them are networks. There are many other types of networks too, for example, social networks such as Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., communication networks such as the Bell Telephone System network and the internet, and so forth. The mathematical notion of these networks are called graphs. The concepts, properties, and algorithms that work for graphs in general can be applied to real networks too. There are two traditional network searching or foraging algorithms, breadth-first and depth-first search. Let's say that it's Saturday morning and you and your spouse want to look for garage sales. You could start in your local neighborhood, then proceed to the next ones out and continue spreading out in concentric circles. This is breadth-first. But let's change strategy. This is a special Saturday. There's a group garage sale at a church a few neighborhoods away or in the town center. You would go straight to these locations and then visit additional garage sales on the way back. This is depth first. A star search is a little between the two. Let's look at this strategy. You start in your local neighborhood and visit the first garage sale. While you're there, you ask other buyers where they've been and what looks good out there. You evaluate their best suggestions. You would keep track of all the best garage sale tips and add new ones as you move from garage sale to garage sale. Once you're ready to move to another garage sale, you go to the one that shows the best promise on your tips list, even if it means driving across town. This is the essence of A-star search. Though I don't know for sure how algorithms in navigation apps, such as driving directions, work, I would consider using a star search. Let's say that you want to drive from location A to location B. The algorithm starts at A and explores the local roads, almost like tendrils of mold you've described before. The heuristic it uses to find the best path will be how close you are to B. Direct paths will get first priority, but it won't ignore paths that move further away from B either. That's because an initial direction that moves away from B might eventually reach a highway ramp or provide a much faster trip to B, even if driving in the wrong direction. Ants foraging kind of do this too. As the ants come back from food sources, they drop pheromone trails. As the ants confirm the food source, they make the pheromone trail stronger, so more ants will exploit it. However, there are still foraging ants that don't follow the strong scent. They're looking for new sources, since the good source might eventually fade. Ant foraging can be thought of as a type of distributed A-star search. The A-star search Wikipedia page has too many videos that illustrate the algorithm well. I especially like the example of finding the most efficient train route across the USA. This very much resembles mold tendrils. I first encountered A-Star Search when I took an online algorithm course taught at Princeton. A-Star Search was an assignment in solving a tile slider puzzle. I'm proud to say that the search tree illustration in the assignment was originally created by me as I was working with the professor as an online TA, and they have included it in the assignment now. And he signs off Jim in New Jersey, but not really near Princeton. And then Jim also has a follow-up that ties into the same email that came out after our episode about orcs. Remember in the episode on orcs, we talked about the orcs and hobbits problem, which was about a problem-solving theory. This question about how people psychologically tend to adapt when they encounter problems in this puzzle where you need to get orcs and hobbits across a river. And one of the things that was discovered about this was the perils of what's known as the hill climbing algorithm. It's a common algorithm that is used in some computer programs, but we also just use it in our brains, which is you basically have a goal state that you want to get to. And it's something like, you know, get to the highest possible altitude. And then you take a step and you see if you're closer. And if so, you keep going in that direction. And if not, you turn back. And you keep doing that until you get to the top of the hill. But the problem with the hill climbing algorithm is that if you're in a landscape with multiple hills and valleys, you will tend to just get stuck at the top of the nearest hill, and you will not explore hills that could go even higher if you were willing to go down first to get to them. And so this is an illustration of that when we're trying to solve problems or be creative, sometimes we need to apparently backtrack in the short term to reach a better outcome in the long term. And Jim follows up by saying, Robert and Joe, Joe's description of the hill climbing algorithm is exactly what occurs with A-star search, as I had written about previously with mushroom searching. The hill climbing technique is very nearsighted. It can only look at the next potential step and not take in the entire landscape. This is not a bad technique. Hill climbing exploits what appears to be the best path forward toward a solution, but as the example captured so well, you might be hiking up the wrong hill. Joe introduced randomness, but there's another algorithmic technique, which I mentioned in my last email as well. That technique is to introduce a handicap to the solution path. The more you exploit a given solution path based on hill climbing or any other heuristic, the more expensive it becomes as that solution path gets longer. You may run into a situation where the solution path gets so long and the handicap is so crippling that you abandon the exploited path and venture off to explore another part of the solution space. While this isn't officially adding randomness, it does introduce the concept of hopping around in the solution space and not becoming fixated upon one possible solution. It's a trade-off/balance of exploiting a promising path versus exploring new ones, Jim in New Jersey. And, you know, I got to say, I really like this, and I think it could be applied outside of just pure computer algorithms as well. If you think about, you know, whenever you found a solution that works to do something, or at least works so far, maybe try out the idea that every time you repeat a working solution again, you do it again the same way you've done it before, maybe it gets a little bit more expensive. Like you're having to pay an increasing sum every time you do that, which will eventually encourage you to you know, make sure you're not missing out on better solutions that are available to you just because you've got one solution that you know sort of works.
Interesting, interesting. All right, here's another one from Jim in New Jersey. This is in response to our episode on the bed, the invention of the bed. Robert and Joe, you didn't mention how astronauts sleep in space in your bed episode. Since there is no gravity, they can sleep almost anywhere, but they tether themselves so as not to float around in the environment. Private crew quarters on the International Space Station are only slightly bigger than a phone booth. Part of that includes a sleeping bag that tethers to the wall. But I think they can sleep anywhere on the station. Without gravity, their arms tend to float in front of them. And he included an illustration of what one of these setups consists of. And yeah, this is interesting. I'd read that about having to strap your arms down before. That's interesting. Like you could, if you don't strap them down, your arms are just kind of floating free in front of you. And I think I've read before that it can be kind of like this kind of ghostly effect of like, whose hands are these?
Uh-huh. You know? They poke you in the eye.
Yeah. Oh, and then Jim follows up and says, I didn't state the obvious in my original email. There are no beds to speak of in space. You don't need them when there's no gravity. Their beds are closer to hammocks. As for my subject line about snoring in space, which I include as a joke, is more interesting than a joke. Astronauts don't snore in space either. The lack of gravity doesn't block airways as much.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I had not heard that. So that's pretty interesting. But also interesting that they're basically strung up in hammocks, because I do think we could come back and do an entire episode based on the invention of the hammock. There's some really interesting stuff there.
Okay, this next message comes from Heather. Heather says, hey, y'all, I frequently binge on your podcast episodes as you happen to be some of the only people with whom I can delve deeply into obscure and common topics to the point of sheer exhaustion. And for me, intellectual bliss. Well, I'm glad it's fun. Heather says, I just heard your December 9th, 2020 episode of The Artifact, The Poison Tooth. I love it. Today it was, for me, a great appetizer before a full-length Stuff to Blow Your Mind episode. I imagine on a busy day, this kind of informative quickie will make a satisfying mental snack. Thank you for keeping me well-fed with an ever-increasing variety of mind-blowing content. Without you, my intellect would certainly stunt, atrophy, and shrivel up into a pathetic shadow of its former potential. Oh, that's extreme. I guess she's kidding. She says, nah, but seriously, life is better with you in it, so keep going. Thank you for your hard work, and all the best to you in the coming year, Heather. Well, thank you, Heather. Thank you so much for the kind words, and we're glad we could be there for you.
Yeah, and I'm glad to hear some positive feedback on the Artifact episodes. They are kind of just sort of short-form audio blog posts,
yeah.
And we're just switching back and forth for the most part on doing these. So, we're going to keep at it, and it should be a great place to discuss very specific ideas, particular items, particular points in time, that sort of thing, and just discuss them briefly instead of devoting an entire episode to them.
Oh, yeah. I feel like they're a great outlet because we used to come across things like this all the time where we'd find something that we found really interesting but just like wasn't a whole episode worth of anything. You know,
it was something
that might make 5 or 10 minutes worth of content. And here you go. I mean, this is a good outlet for it. I feel like back in the day, you used to turn things like that into blog posts. I only ever wrote a few posts for the blog, but you had great blog posts back on the old website when that was alive. But now I feel like this is a really good alternative to the blog of old.
Yeah, I'm going to have to resurrect some of those blog posts of old.
Yeah.
Pull their bodies out of the muck, see if I can resurrect the flesh and make it march off into the podcast feed for me.
Our old blog and the website have turned into bog bodies now.
Yeah. But if one knows the appropriate magic, they can be revived. All right. Here's another one. This one comes to us from Jeremy. Hey, guys and or staff member reading this. Seth, basically. It's just us and Seth.
Well, we don't – I think maybe he's wondering if we have like a dedicated like employees or something to go through our listener mail for us. Unfortunately, no.
No. Now, we do have we never give him a shout out, but Sam is in charge of our social media stuff, and he does all
true.
So we don't have to. So
yes.
Massive kudos to Sam.
Sam, you do an amazing job. You really make my life better by allowing me to not really look at Twitter or Facebook.
Right. All right. So anyway, Jeremy continues. I've never actually emailed any of the podcasts I've listened to over the years, so this is a little strange for me, but I felt I had to let you guys know just how great the new Sideshow is. I've been listening to Stuff to Blow Your Mind since back in the Allison Loudermilk days stuff from the science lab and have never missed an episode. The way you guys can discuss the real or possible science of anything from the mundane to mythological creatures to world-changing technologies never fails to catch my interest and keep me engaged in the world around us. Being a huge movie buff, especially for terrible B-movies, I can't tell you how the weekly edition of Weird House Cinema is. I think they meant to mean how great. I'm going to put in great.
How spectacular. How life-altering.
Anyway, they continue. Even my podcast-free wife is happy because I can listen to you guys discuss the movies as an alternative to boring her with the behind-the-scenes details of Troll 2. She made it about 15 minutes in before, quote, remembering she had errands to run.
Now, wait a minute. Is that 15 minutes into the movie Troll 2, 15 minutes into you talking about it, or 15 minutes into our episode?
I took it to mean maybe the movie.
Okay.
Like she made it 15 minutes into the movie.
Okay.
Because, yeah, Troll 2 is not for everybody. They continue. Anyway, I just wanted to thank you guys for the great work, and I hope Weird House Cinema will turn into a permanent addition to the podcast. I wish you guys the best and hope you keep staying safe. Thanks for reading.
That's the plan for now.
Yeah, I mean, it's as permanent as anything. So, yeah, we're going to keep doing it. All right, we're going to go ahead and turn off Carney. We're gonna seal the listener mailbag for the week. But yeah, we're going to continue to do these. Every Monday we're going to, or at least as long as we have listener mail to read, we're going to keep doing listener mail episodes and try and keep this a regular thing where we're having more of a dialogue with the listeners. So keep it coming. Keep writing in with your feedback to recent episodes of the show, to older episodes. You know, you hear a Vault episode and you like an idea in there, have some feedback. Don't be shy about writing in, even if it's an older piece. Write in about Weird House Cinema, write in about the shorties we do, anything, write in about episodes you'd like to hear. All of that is fair game. In the meantime, if you want to listen to other episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you'll find the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Wherever that is, we just ask that you rate, review, and subscribe. You can also go to stufftoblowyourmind.com, and that will shoot you over to the iHeart listing for our page. Once you are there, you'll find a little tab there. You can click on the store, and that'll take you over to a place where you can buy some t-shirts and stickers and whatnot that have our logo on it or a cool monster design. So check that out if you want as well.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback about this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.